Welcome to Everything is Changing. In each episode, we focus on circular economy, ecosystem restoration, energy transformation, sustainable mobility, and water resources. I am Ahmetcan Uzlaşık. Perspective is everything, and everything is changing. In this episode of Everything is Changing, we talk with Arthur Hinch, senior expert on sustainable energy systems at İKLE Europe. Arthur leads the Fast and Fair Renewables and Grids Initiative, the first European agreement that brings together developers, local governments, civil society, and energy communities to ensure fairness in green transition. We dive into why building renewables isn't just about speed, but also about trust between neighbors, governments, and industries. Arthur explains the challenges from local resistance to wind farms to the importance of sharing benefits openly and from community ownership to Europe's massive grid needs. His key message, fairness is the key to moving faster. Hello, Arthur. Thank you for being here with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Today, we are going to talk about fast and fair renewables and grids. To start us off, could you please introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your role, please?
Sure, happy to. So, my name is Arthur Hinch. I'm a senior expert sustainable energy systems at İKLE Europe. İKLE is the Global Association of Local and Regional Governments for Sustainability. I've been working with İKLE for the last 6-7 years, primarily around the topic of prosumerism acceptance, what can local governments do to drive acceptance for electricity and renewables in general. And within the context of that, we have recently launched the Europe's first cross-sectoral agreement on fairness in renewable energy, the so-called Fast and Fair Renewables and Grids Initiative. And I'm the facilitator of this European consensus and the coordinator of the initiative.
I want to start simple for those who don't know about Fast and Fair. What does Fast and Fair stand for when we talk about renewables and electricity grids?
Yeah, so on one hand, we know that Europe needs to accelerate the rollout of electricity and grid infrastructure. We need to achieve very ambitious rollout targets and climate targets overall. And so on one hand, we know that the deployment needs to be accelerated, needs to be fast. That is true. At the same time, we see that around Europe, the enthusiasm for renewable energy remains high, but there continue to be quite a lot of, issues at the local level when it often comes to the mediation between different interests as they materialize on the local level when it comes to the deployment of additional infrastructure assets. And we therefore need to ensure that the deployment of these assets is not only fast, but it also is fair, which means that people who live locally actually perceive the project as being fair. And we will go into that into more detail later in the conversation, I understand.
I want to talk more on the, let's say, data. The EU has committed to cutting emissions by at least 55% by 2030. And this means raising renewables to something like 42.5% of gross energy use. We know that that requires installing the equivalent of 80% of what today's total generation capacity in just 5 years. What kind of shift does this represent? And what does it mean in terms of, again, grid and infrastructure needs?
Yeah, this implies that the additional needs are massive. It basically means that many of Europe's areas that currently do not yet are host to renewable energy will be host to renewable energy, of course, subject to all kinds of assessments and suitability assessments. But this basically means that a huge portion of Europe's citizen will be and already in contact with renewable energy, solar farms, wind farms, and others, but also additional grid assets, which we really need very urgently to be able to even accommodate the massive need for renewable energy in the first place.
Despite this urgency, as you mentioned, we know that the deployment of renewables and electricity grids is still too slow, especially at local levels, which we are going to dive into that later. But let's talk about, I want to talk about the bottlenecks. What are the reasons behind this, let's say, resistance? We know that there's political hesitation, probably some community resistance as key barriers. So what are the consequences of this delay and how can we unblock the process while keeping which is the most important thing, I assume, fairness at the center.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the bottlenecks, as you said already, I mean, are many. On one hand, of course, it's the element of how renewable assets and grid assets are perceived at the local level, whether people at the local level are accepting of them or whether they're, you know, perceiving them as being fair. But maybe before explaining that in more detail, I also want to briefly mention that, of course, the deployment of additional electricity and grid infrastructure is not only slowed down because of acceptance issues and fairness issues, right? There's other forces at play here as well, specifically, you know, the lack of digitalization, the lack of staff in permitting authorities. And really, just to give an example, for your average wind turbine, it can take, or wind park, it can take a truckload of paperwork to submit to the authorities to make sure that the project developer actually gets the permits to build. So there's many reasons why projects get delayed. But one of the key reasons why, you know, projects get delayed is because projects end up in court, because on the local level, often different interests are not able to align, right? So to give a very striking example, I suppose, and this is, of course, generalizing a bit, but it drives the point home. So at the local level, you often see that different sectors have different interests, right? So of course, the developer wants to make a profit, right? Because the developer is running a business. The investor wants to also get a return on the investment. The landowner wants a return on the land, so the land lease payments. Environmental organizations want to protect local environments. The energy communities or energy cooperatives will be often the first ones to call for more direct ownership and participation. And local citizens, you know, sometimes they're in favor of the project, but also very often, unfortunately, they're not in favor of the project, and they have their own reasons for not being in favor of. And within that context, local governments, and specifically often in rural context, the rural local governments, rural mayors, they're often the ones that, while often, not always, but often working as volunteers, mind you, they're the ones that have to negotiate between all these different interests, often to make sure that projects don't escalate, right? And there's this very lovely quote, I use it all the time, from a rural municipality in Germany, and the mayor told us that, well, this, we are really looking forward to renewables in that sense, but we need to make sure that despite the deployment of renewables, we need to ensure that everybody will still live with their neighbors in peace, basically. And I think that really drives the point home of what we're trying to achieve with this initiative and with these principles that were agreed across the sectors, because ultimately it's about enabling local governments, local actors, to better mediate across different interests. And the idea is that if we are able to do this, then projects don't escalate, and then they don't need to be arbitrated by the court, which in an ideal scenario would then result in a much smoother project implementation and hopefully an accelerated uptake of renewables and grid infrastructure in the long run.
You already emphasized on the role of the local communities and local governments, and I want to take it from here, because I feel like whenever we are discussing these issues, we're always kind of like looking at it from a macro perspective, with the national, talking about the national government and at the EU level. So why is it so important that local communities and mayors are brought into the conversation, especially early, when planning renewable energy projects?
Yeah, well, that's because local governments are, I mean, they're the layer, the governmental layer, I suppose, where stuff gets done, to put it boldly, right? So in the end, no matter what is decided on the European or national levels, it is local mayors, local government staff that are, that have to basically live with the infrastructure, and ergo they should also have some degree of say, you know, where the infrastructure is placed and how it's being deployed as well. And, well, you see a lot of evidence of this, actually, when you look around projects around Europe, like those projects, those developers, I suppose, that really went the extra mile and had thorough engagement strategies in place to engage with local communities, really saw a lot smoother kind of implementation of their project. Of course, the local community is always interested in having some kind of local say, but also benefit, you know, for their own local context when it comes to new projects. So yeah, if you thoroughly consider kind of the place of local government, but also consider the need and the importance of the need of local citizens and engaging local communities early, then current evidence seems to suggest that this is very much in favor of creating smoother deployment in the first place.
As we also emphasized in the earlier questions, the community pushback is something that you're working on. We often hear about community pushback when it comes to, you know, wind farms and solar parks.
Mm.
And what are the main reasons behind this resistance more specifically? And how do you think media and perhaps NGOs play a role here?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, there's many different reasons why communities would not be accepting of a project. And it's also quite difficult to say, you know, that there are certain reasons that apply always across the board, because in the end, you know, every community is kind of different. But ultimately, what you tend to see is that if local communities perceive that they are consulted at a very late stage, when basically there's very little room for impacting a project, that this is an issue for lack of acceptance, when people see that a lot of the all of the financial revenue kind of leaves the region, as opposed to there being a direct local impact. This is often an issue for lack of acceptance. But also there's, you know, the usual concerns around the visuals and the kind of noise elements surrounding renewables. But it differs really quite a lot, and it's important therefore that projects are able to respond to this by offering certain, you know, community engagement strategies, benefit opportunities, and working with local communities in a manner which is also really relevant and kind of place specific to the community that they're working in.
We have some best examples that you also display in your website, like the Margoning Wind Farm in Poland, which is often mentioned as a success story, if I'm not mistaken. What made their approach to community engagement and benefit sharing effective?
So in their case, I mean, they included public consultation and information points in local municipalities and the publication of materials through local media. So they ensured while doing this that they had a, you know, high level of transparency. It's quite important here that also the developers, like in this case, you know, make sure to understand really kind of the local community and have these conversations. I think by having these good relations with the local government and from the get-go to approach the project with this mindset that they want to collaborate with the local authority and the local institutions, that really helped to ensure the certain level of transparency here. And actually, this leads me to the other question, which you also asked on the media, which also should respond to certainly. So I think in their case, in Margonin, they work quite nicely with local media. And I think you see the kind of equivalent of this on the European or the national level, right? So what we tend to see is that renewables in certainly mass media tend to be communicated about it in very different ways. What you often hear is issues related to deployment of renewables, acceptance issues as things are not advancing. And sometimes, you know, you hear some positive news, but then it only zones into one specific best practice example in one specific country. But what we actually want to achieve, and I think what is really necessary, is that in the media, we also have a new discourse around, you know, what is actually, that it is possible to deploy, you know, renewables in a fast, but also in a fair manner. And we need to have this kind of understanding, a new kind of conversation really in the media based on multiple best practices, and actually that show that it is possible for different sectors to agree, and then that projects don't have to escalate because local people don't that project escalate because local people don't want them. And I think if we have lots of evidence that suggests that like in Margolini and others that suggests that it is possible to go about this in a kind of harmonious manner, then it would be great if this would be also reflected in a different media narrative about renewables in the future.
That is so true. And as a journalist, I can definitely confirm that media tends to be more destructive rather constructive, especially when it comes to, I think, green transition. What we saw in Spain and Portugal after the blackouts, I think, can be a good example of that. And here, since you mentioned transparency, I don't want to ask a general question, but in this kind of projects, transparency kind of became like a buzzword, you know, everyone is talking about it. But in reality, how does it really help build trust between developers and resistance? Maybe we can also mention the Südharz grid project in Germany here, which, if I'm not mistaken, introduced informal public dialogue beyond what is legally required. What can we learn from this more proactive people-first approach and also the transparency perspective?
Yeah, exactly. So transparency ultimately is the key to ensuring that you don't have major kind of concerns in the local community. I mean, if you are transparent about how you go about planning the project and deploying the project, then this already goes a long way to getting people on board. And you see this in examples like in Südharz, but also in other cases around Europe, really, where engagement process has been made very transparent. And I think when we talk about transparency within the context of the Fast and Fair Renewables and Grids Initiative, of course, we talk about the transparency element, as you here suggest, with regards to community input and participation and being transparent about that, but we also refer to the financial side of things, right? So, because as I've said here already, having community benefits in place is important. However, we need to also consider that the use of, you know, this additional revenue that goes into the local community needs to be managed transparently. That means, for example, that we need to ensure clarity in national legislation when negotiating benefit schemes and providing additional voluntary payments, which then feed into local social infrastructure projects within the context of national regional regulations. And this needs to be done in a transparent manner. So, for example, the local government, the municipality, which would be the recipient of this additional revenue or financial kind of inflow into the municipality because of the renewables and or grid project, that it needs to be made publicly available and actively communicated through various channels, however any revenue by municipalities from renewables and or grids is used. And by doing so, you create a lot of trust and in the project and in the stakeholders that are engaged in the project.
Maybe from here, we can also move on to the community-led energy project. Community-led energy sounds inspiring, yeah. No doubt. And I recently interviewed the Rescoop project also, which they're also very interested in this topic. What are the main challenges that you think keeping people away from co-owning local energy sites, local energy projects?
Yeah, so there's many different reasons, I suppose, why, let's say, rollout of community-led initiatives around Europe has been developing, but it certainly has not been developing at a pace that would be expected by now, let's say. So the situation is that we have already for a long time in the Renewable Energy Directive, of course, certain provisions and articles pertaining to, for example, renewable energy communities, but also active consumers and prosumers and all of that. The reality is that the speed of the transposition of the European regulatory framework into national law when it comes to enabling frameworks for example, renewable energy communities. And that really differed a lot between member states, and it's still not quite there where it should be. So as a result of that, you see that there is different, you know, levels of regulatory enabling frameworks for community-led initiatives in countries, and that explains partially the difference in uptake. But what I would like to emphasize here specifically, that within the context of our initiative, we've made the principle of community-led initiatives in a dedicated principle. So specifically here, we talk about the importance that there is a level playing field between all actors on the renewable energy market. So this means that certain actors which have less administrative and financial capacities, that they need support to allow them to develop their own projects and access the grid on equal footing with professional actors. So this is already reflected in European law. However, like I said, the actual implementation of this really differs across the countries, and it's not quite there where it needs to be. So since you mentioned Rescoop, and just to emphasize that Rescoop is also one of the endorsing stakeholders of the Fast and Fair Renewables and Grids Initiative, and maybe after this I could quickly explain to you also who the others are. And kind of collectively in this cross-sectoral group, we emphasize the importance of having this level playing field and giving special conditions for community-led initiatives so that they can compete in the market, right? So that can, for example, also include the creation of space and tenders, auctions, and public procurement to allocate room and to remunerate projects developed by renewable energy communities, right? Why is this so important? Why is it such a milestone that we actually have this principle now? So if you look at the Fast and Fair Renewables and Grids Initiative, we see that there's a lot of different stakeholders actually on board. So we have stakeholders representing the large solar and wind industry players, so Solar Power, Wind Europe, European Renewable Energy Federation, but there's also the civil society like CAN Europe and the European Environmental Bureau. There is, of course, local governments, so the ICLE, Energy Cities, Council of European Municipalities and Regions. There's youth organizations, There is an organization supporting municipalities in Germany in the rural level. So we really have an rest group. So we have to really have this cross-sectoral agreement around these principles. And having a cross-sectoral agreement and an understanding between the smaller actors on the energy market, as well as the large actors, for the first time around a principle that emphasizes the importance of empowering community-led initiatives, we think really will change the game, and also will make it more attractive for example, local governments to really put their weight behind the promotion of community-led initiatives, because there's now not only the backing of European law, which has been transposed, mind you, again, differently in different countries, but there is now actively the backing of the big players, the corporate players, the for-profit players, the non-profit players, the energy communities, civil society, all jointly agreeing that this is a good idea. So that's why it's such a big deal that we have this, actually.
So for this goal, you have this big united, kind of like a European front, which brings together developers, civil society, local governments, and organizations like projects like Riskup. So why is, kind of already explained it, but like a final message I want to ask, why is this united approach so important? And maybe, as I said, like a final message, what would you want to say on how can we improve ourselves in this matter?
Yeah, so the Fast and Fair Renewables and Grids Initiative is Europe's, or the world's really, first cross-sectoral agreement on how to deploy renewables, not only in a fast way, but also in a fair way. It's the first agreement between large renewable energy actors, for-profit act players, non-profit, energy communities, civil society, environmental organizations, local governments, that for the first time have come together on a higher European level and agreed what do we jointly set as the baseline for fairness. And we hope that this will contribute to taking the bias out of the conversation when we talk about the deployment of renewable energy. And when you look into local governments, rural context, for example, we hope that by being able to refer to a higher kind of cross-sectoral agreement on fairness, it will be much easier in the future to mediate between different interests on the local level. Right, because now it's no longer a matter of civil society saying, well, here's different actors, basically civil society and developers and environmental organizations all having their own ideas in terms of what is a fair energy transition. They still do have their own ideas, but they now all come together with the other actors to establish a joint baseline that we do not go beneath. And this joint baseline is already quite ambitious, right? It took about 6 months to negotiate this, because as you can imagine, and this is totally normal, all the different players have certain different approaches, different backgrounds that they come from, different constituencies they represent. But we've already received quite some positive feedback that by having had the opportunity to bring these interests together on a higher level, we hope that this will trickle down in the national, rural and regional contexts in the future.
This initiative is truly very ambitious. Arthur, thank you very much for your time and being here today, and thank you for your insightful answers.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That was Arthur Hinch from ICLEI Europe, offering a vital perspective on how fairness and community involvement are key to speeding up Europe's energy transition. If this conversation resonated with you, follow Everything is Changing for more interviews at the crossroads of science, society, and the climate crisis. Perspective is everything, and everything is changing. See you next time.